The play yard was the bottom of a canyon. On the cliff high above, the proctors spun and struck and slashed, practicing with lightsabers. Jaina stared at them in disbelief. Why did these bad people have lightsabers? Lightsabers were for good people, for Jedi Knights. She turned her back on the proctors and kept looking for a way to escape. A fence closed the far end of the canyon. It might not be so hard to climb as the stone cliffs. She could tell she was not on Munto Kodru. She was not on any world she had ever visited. It was a very small world. Past the fence, the horizon lay very close, and the horizon curved. The tiny hot sun moved in the sky so fast the shadows moved. This isn't a real world, Jaina thought. It's too small. It's a made one. A built one. Someone nudged her from behind. The red-gold centaur child danced around in front of her. Her sides and back were spotted with white. Velvety knobs above her temples poked through her wild, curly hair.
You're different, the red-gold child said. I'm Jaina. I'm Lusa.
Lusa looked sidelong at the werewolf.
Does it bite? No, it just has big teeth.
Hand in hand, Jaina and Lusa walked across the yard. The edge of the play area ended 10 paces from the fence. All the other children were walking around, but no one entered the undisturbed border. Jaina took a step toward it.
I want to see the dragon, she said.
Then she thought,
why should I even believe there's a dragon? Hethra told me my mama is dead. I don't believe that.
I don't believe anything he says. I don't believe anything mean, nasty Tigress says. She looked around for Tigress, but he had disappeared. A few bored helpers stood together and gossiped, hardly paying any attention to the children. Beyond the fence, wind had blown the sand into low, rolling dunes.
There's no place for a dragon to hide.
She took another step. A huge lizard erupted from the sand. Sand showered up around it and over the fence and into Jaina's hair. She shrieked in fear and delight. The werewolf yelped. The other children ran away toward the safety of the stairwell. The dragon crouched on all fours, lashing its heavy tail. It growled. It peered this way, that way. It was beautiful, Jaina thought. Not very graceful, but powerful. It had thick, muscular legs and a short, heavy tail with a spiked knob on the tip. Its huge, long head was mostly mouth.
It's wonderful.
She wished Jason were here. Jason would love it. The other children came cautiously out of the stairwell and gathered behind Jaina and Lusa. Suddenly, 3 ships screamed down out of space and streaked across the sky above the canyon. Without a word, the children clustered together. A whisper of fear passed among them.
What's the matter, Lusa? What's going to happen? They come for us. They take us.
Lusa put her hands protectively over the velvet knobs on her forehead.
They cut off your horns.
You're going to get sent away.
Gloating, the boy named Vram pointed at Lusa and Jaina.
Whenever the ships come, Lord Hethra sends the bad ones away.
Good. Who wants to stay in this rotten place? They cut off your horns to make you obey, but my horns haven't come through the velvet yet.
She stared at Jaina, fear in her eyes.
If they cut the velvet, I'll die.
Line up, children.
Hethra's voice made Jaina shiver. Frightened, the children shuffled into a ragged line, scuffing their feet in the sand. The fast-moving sun touched the canyon wall. In a minute, it had set. Floodlights came on all around, so bright Jaina had to blink. The overseers lined the children up, then Hethrir strode forward. All the proctors, their metals polished and their epaulets glittering, marched behind him, their lightsabers hung at their belts. More helpers followed, guiding a second group of children, Jason's group. And finally Tigress climbed to the top of the stairwell. Anakin slept against Tigress's shoulder.
But it was nowhere near Anakin's nap time. What's the matter with him?
Jaina wondered.
I hope they just made him sleep again. Like they made us sleep in the meadow when they stole us.
In the center of the square, Hethrir turned to Jaina and Lusa and Mr. Chamberlain's werewolf. Vram grinned nastily at them and ran behind Hethrir.
Jaina.
No.
She wanted him to be mad at her so he would send her and her brothers away. Suddenly she was in line. She felt like someone had slapped her.
I won't cry, she thought. I won't.
Mr. Chamberlain's werewolf growled. Suddenly it yelped and flattened its ears and crouched down, staying very still. That left Lusa standing all alone. Hethrer froze her with his gaze.
Perhaps you will regret defying me, he said,
and turned his back on her. The centaur child fled to the line. She was shaking. The werewolf slunk to Jaina's side. There was a long ceremony. Hethrir promoted some of the children to proctors, and they got pale blue coats that they strutted around in proudly. Other children were made helpers and given rust-red coats. The Empire Reborn! The proctors shouted so loud Jaina jumped.
The Empire Reborn? She thought. What's that?
Jaina knew the Empire had been evil. Why would anyone ever want to bring it back? Then Hethrir gestured. Lusa pranced forward nervously. Hethrir held out a lightsaber, except it had no lens at its end, only a small glass bulb. Jaina tried to figure out what the fake lightsaber really was.
Watch, Hethrir said.
The glass bulb lit up, then went dark again.
Take it,
Hethrir said to Lusa. The centaur child obeyed.
Turn it on, as I did.
Lusa could do it. For a second, Jaina perceived that her friend could touch the Force and use it. She was untrained and inexperienced, but she had the ability.
Hethra's power slipped over Lusa. It blocked her talent. The bulb of the fake lightsaber remained dark.
No fair, Jaina cried.
Hethra's cold, wet blanket fell around her. She gasped.
You have failed, Hethra said to Lusa.
Two of the helpers dragged Lusa away.
No, no!
Do not defy me. I'm doing this for your own good.
Jaina struggled up and ran to Lusa and flung her arms around her neck. Slowly, slowly, Hethra's force separated them. They grabbed hands and held tight, but their hands slipped apart. Hethra used his test to divide the children into two groups, one with Jaina and Jason, the other with Lusa. All the children were terrified, crying or keening or hunkering down within their body armor or shaking their fur. All the children in Jaina's group were human beings. A few human children had been sent to Lusa's group, but mostly Lusa's group was other species.
Take me, Jaina said to Hethrir. Take me instead. Don't take Lusa away. Don't cut off her horns.
Hethrir strode over to Jaina. He glanced down at her. His gaze flicked briefly over her face. The smothering sensation of wet sand all around her disappeared.
There.
Hethrir said, using his kind voice. He was talking to everybody, not just Jaina.
Go back to your places and study hard. The other children are going away because they're not as good as you. You may stay because I expect you to make me proud of you.
I never will,
Jaina shouted.
I never will. Lucy's just as good as me, and I'll never do anything to make you proud.
Alderaan fell out of hyperspace. The kidnapper's trail led to a cold, dark region of space. The nearest star was light years away. A burst of pain and fear and despair obliterated the trail. Leia cried out.
But I didn't feel death, Leia thought. It wasn't death. And it wasn't Jaina or Jason or Anakin. Who was it?
Leia extended her ship's sensors outward. She watched and listened and found a ship.
That's it. I have you.
She fought back the urge to press toward it immediately. It would not do to find her children only to fall into a trap. R2-D2 raced into the cockpit, grabbed the new ship's signature from the sensors and traced it in the air. Then the droid traced another signature beside it, the record of the kidnapper's ship. The two ships were nothing alike. The vessel she had found was a huge, hulking passenger freighter, the kind the Empire had used to transport unwilling colonists from star to star. It traveled slowly, carrying its sleeping cargo at sublight speeds. Alderaan's sensors touched a second ship, and a third.
I don't believe it.
Fully 24 abandoned starships lay within Leia's perception. They hung in a slowly shifting cluster.
Chewbacca roared with grief and understanding.
What are you doing up? Leia asked him. He limped forward and lowered himself painfully into the co-pilot's seat. Chewbacca had been a slave. He had been kidnapped from the deep and magical forests of his world. He had been chained and punished for any defiance, and worked nearly to death. Young Han Solo of the Imperial Navy had freed him. It had destroyed Han's Imperial career. Is that what happened here? Did the Empire hijack ships? Did it steal their passengers? Leia looked at the reports more closely.
Oh, no.
The ship still contained passengers, and many of them had died. But some were alive, just barely alive. Zavri showed Han, Luke, and 3PO the way along a path that led toward still another dome. The trail led into a dense thicket of tall, twisting bushes. It finally stopped at a dome that was almost as dim as the green illumination of the leaf tunnel. Great gray stones loomed around them. The rocks perched on the edge of a cliff, the steep and partially collapsed side of a huge crater. Zavri edged over the top of a great cracked stone. Han slithered up beside her. From their vantage point, they could see the whole dome. Its floor lay far below. A small complex of buildings occupied the center of the crater. The buildings were gilt and brightly lit. The delicate lines of the complex traced calligraphy against stone. Several rough paths led into the crater. On all of them, people picked their way across the desolate lava toward the haven.
"That is our destination," Zavri said.
Luke was pale and tense, his gaze far away.
"Kid, what's the matter?" Han asked him.
I don't know, something... There's something here, but I've never..."
He started to move as if he had never begun the conversation.
"Jedi," Zavri said.
Reluctantly, Luke glanced back.
"Let me lead you. There is an easy path farther along the rim. I would prefer no one else knew of this escape."
Tigress answered Lord Hethrir's summons to his receiving chamber. He carried the child Anakin, who slept more than any little one Tigress had ever met. Hethra had built his private receiving chamber from the finest wood of all the old empire. Body wood, they called it. It resembled the flesh of the people who had inhabited the forest before the Emperor claimed the world. To his most favored officers, he dispensed the right to exploit certain resources. Hethra's reward had been the license to export body wood. Lord Hethra had begun his fortune from the license. The surface of the polished body wood was the palest pink. Scarlet streaks shot through it, gleaming with light like precious stones. It was said that the bodywood trees sustained a certain intelligence, and they cried when Hethrir cut them down. Tigris almost believed that they cried. He knew their wood bled. He had the task, the honor, of cleaning up the scarlet rivulets before they pooled on the floor and stained it.
"When will Lord Hethrir allow me to do something really important?" Tigris wondered.
He shifted Anakin to a more comfortable position in his aching arms. Tigris had been moved by the promotion ceremony, but he resented being left out. In the receiving chamber, Lord Hethrir welcomed his guests. Lord Kwakuku, Lady Uchi, and Lord Snorik bowed low. Hethrir acknowledged their respect with a simple nod. He sat in a chair of gold and fur and satin pillows. He glanced at Tigris and gestured with his chin toward a small rug on the floor beside him. Thrilled, Tigris took his seat. He had never been permitted to sit at Lord Hethrir's feet before. As Tigris sat down, Anakin stirred and woke. Careful of the precious burden of the child, Tigris tried to hide his terror. What if he did something wrong? What if he dropped Anakin or caused him to cry? But Anakin looked into Tigris's eyes, stuck his thumb in his mouth, snuggled against Tigris's shoulder, and fell asleep again. The guests approached Hethrir, making a second set of obeisances. They feared Lord Hethrir, though each one owned an armed ship, perhaps even a fleet of ships, having saved themselves and their resources from the fall of the Empire. They gave their allegiance to Lord Hethrir. When the Lord was ready, when the Empire Reborn vanquished the New Republic, he would become Emperor. These guests and all his other followers would acknowledge him publicly. Tigris wanted to be at his side when that happened.
"My time is short today," Lord Hethrir said. "Let us conclude our business quickly."
An image formed between the guests and the glowing wall of body wood. The image displayed the children culled from the training group. The guests inspected them.
Soon, Hethra said, we will travel to Crisia Station to secure my alliance with Waru. My followers are gathering now. Each one will wish to choose from among these children. You may bid against each other for the license to distribute.
Lord Hethra named the sum at which the bidding must start.
That is a large amount.
Lord Snorrick let his voice trail off without even adding the honorifics due Lord Hethra. Hethra frowned.
You doubt me, Snorrick?
Not at all, my lord. I only wish... I only hope...
Snorrick gasped for breath.
I anticipate living...
He struggled to draw air into his lungs.
Beneath your...
His face grew red, and a tiny trickle of blood flowed from one nostril. He touched it and looked at his stained hand in disbelief.
Your rule...
He collapsed and lay still. Lord Hethra made no gesture, no command, yet two proctors appeared, lifted Lord Snorrick's body, and carried him from the receiving room. The bidding began. Lady Yuki won the auction, the right to offer the group of children to the Empire loyalists in Lord Hethra's gathering. If any remained, she could sell them into the trade. The newest member of the Empire youth entered silently, proud in his new coat, carrying a bottle of fine wine and three delicate glasses on an inlaid tray. The guests raised their glasses to Hethra and toasted.
To the Empire Reborn!
To the Empire Reborn!
To the Empire Reborn!
Cautiously, Leia entered the dark and silent passenger freighter. The power had been cut to such a low level that the gravity barely functioned. Leia's feet touched the floor, but she could jump up and bounce off the ceiling twice her height if she chose. Silent in the vacuum, R2-D2 accelerated to pass her. Chewbacca loomed behind her. He was stiff and sore, and he probably could not move very quickly, but she was glad to have him backing her up. The ship was divided into huge sections, each filled with racks of sleep coffins. The life systems balanced on the edge of failure. Some coffins had gone dark. The people inside had died. Leia rubbed the dust from the transparent cover of one of the sleep coffins. Beneath the glass, a humanoid lay like a fairy tale prince.
From Ferrari,
Leia said. All the people in the sleep coffins were from the same world.
The Empire wiped them out, she said. Wiped out everything on their world. I thought the people were extinct.
Leia set the first sleep coffin to wake.
Can you find the controls of this ship? She asked Chewbacca. Can you get the power back?
He set off down a dark corridor. Leia hurried after him, walking with a low-gravity skiing bounce. R2 followed. In the depths of the ship, Chewbacca found a small chamber. Displays glowed faintly with low readouts. Chewbacca studied the levels for a moment, then traced a pattern into the controls. The ship came alive around them, lights brightening, air shushing through the ventilation. Chewbacca showed her a readout.
What is it?
But he was already loping out of the control room. Chewbacca's cry of grief and rage echoed through the hallway. Leia found him in a cabin as white and clean as a surgery. He stared upward. A Ferrario hung from strange, writhing webbing that hugged her body against the ceiling. Her eyes were open and staring. Her sharp-featured face was gaunt. Her long hair, striped with black and silver, drifted in the air currents as if it were alive. She moved.
She's alive!
The webbing tightened, cutting into her emaciated arms and legs. The Ferrario froze without a sound. Only her eyes moved. Her gaze touched Leia for a moment. Nictitating membranes crept across her black irises, making her look blind.
Get her down, quick! Can you reach her?
Leia exclaimed. Chewbacca stretched upward and tentatively poked at a stray web filament.
No!
The Ferrario's voice was hoarse, growling. Chewbacca snatched his hand back as the filament whipped into a spiral that nearly captured him. Behind them, someone snorted in disgust and amusement. The Ferrario Leia had awakened stood in the doorway, clutching the frame to keep himself on his feet.
You can't get her down like that, he said. You can only get yourself
tangled in the web.
What's your name? Leia asked. How can you think this is funny?
I might ask you the same thing. After all, you're the intruder.
I woke you up. I probably saved your life.
Who asked you to?
Taken aback, Leia paused to collect herself. I don't mind telling you my name. She minded very much telling him her real name. She told him her false identity, the identity that owned the Alderaan. I'm Laylilla, and this is my companion, Gayahab. De Ferrerio sneered.
I do not care to tell you my name, but her name is Ralau.
The name sounded like an insult. Leia gestured toward the ceiling. Please, help me free her.
She's not my clan. I owe her nothing. I owe you nothing.
What do you want? He regarded her suspiciously.
I want my freedom.
It's yours, she said. Please, help us. His eyes narrowed until they nearly closed. Then, abruptly, he made a decision and bent over the cell's data port. He stood back from the controls and glanced at Leia with a smirk. Ralau drifted slowly from the ceiling. The webwork stretched, then contracted, pulling away from her body, pulling out of her body. The ends of the silver strands were dark with her blood. Chewbacca caught her gently. People from many worlds crowded around Han and his companions as Zavari led them toward the graceful gilt building, the central structure in a compound that was apparently some kind of retreat. The building's wings curved around to form a sheltered, quiet courtyard. The visitors gathered just outside, then entered the silent space singly or in small groups. They're sick, Luke said softly. There's somebody in almost every group who's ill or injured. Han saw that Luke was right. Here, a family huddled together, protecting a child or parent or cross-cousin. There, a clan group carried a stretcher that supported a moaning, palsied colleague.
Luke doesn't look so hot himself, Han thought. What's happening to him? He never gets sick.
Zavari's expression was grim. It is our turn. They crossed the courtyard, passed beneath an archway at the far end, and descended into bedlam. Inside, the awed gathering had transformed itself into wailing, begging supplicants. They roiled in an undisciplined crowd toward the back of the wide, low theater, where a high golden altar loomed above them.
Waru, help us!
Waru, heal my child!
Heal my egg-sister!
Protect my hearth-friends from the curse laid upon them!
Look, Luke said urgently. The altar moved.
That is Waru, Zavari said.
The altar, the being, rose higher with a clenching contraction. It oriented itself toward them.
Approach me, Zavari.
The voice filled the chamber with a whisper, insinuating itself past the pleading of the congregation. Zavari stepped forward, and the crowd parted for her. As Han neared the altar, he got a better look at Waru. It was a complex construct of chased gold shields, but beneath the shields, visible from certain angles and upon certain movements of the being, lay a slab of raw, uncovered tissue, like chunks of meat. Fluid, blood, glistened between the massive shields, oozed out and fell by drops and fine streams onto the stage, where it coagulated into a crusted pool. The blood ran off the stage and formed stalactites that hung nearly to the floor of the auditorium.
Ichor, Han thought. This is the first time I've ever seen anything that should truly be called Ichor.
Zavari stopped at the edge of the stage.
Thou art not alone, Zavari.
I am not alone, Waru.
Do they wish to be healed?
No, Waru. I have brought new students to study thy revelations and learn thy truth and appreciate thine existence. To give thee their devotion.
Beside Han, Luke stared at the being with a fixed, hypnotized gaze. Han started to say,
Relax, kid, it's only a...
Zavari shot him a quick, furious, warning glance. Luke turned slowly toward him with an icy, inhuman glare, then returned his attention to Waru. Startled, Han shut up, but he finished the comment to himself.
This is a scam, he thought.
Zavari placed her hand on one of Waru's golden scales. She closed her eyes and fell still. The gold scale took on a pink glow and radiated gentle warmth around Zavari's fingers. Luke took one step toward her, lifting his hand. Han grabbed him and pulled him back. Luke turned on him, snarling. Zavari drew back from Waru. Her handprint glowed, then faded from the golden scale. A drop of ichor oozed from the scale's lower edge and fell with a sticky plop. Zavari made a motion of obeisance toward Waru. The being's attention left them abruptly like a release of pressure. Han staggered one step forward, caught himself, and shrugged off the odd effect, but he was curious about how the effect had been produced. Zavari backed up. The roiling crowd surged ahead of her, each member keening for Waru's recognition. Zavari's knees buckled. Her collapse surprised Han so thoroughly that he nearly let her fall. In the old days, she had never fainted, even at times of exhaustion or pain. "I am all right. I only... speaking with Waru affects me for a moment. But you must see the ceremony." They made their way to the very back of the auditorium. The floor slanted, so they had a view over the crowd. On the stage, in the frozen pool of ichor, Waru waited, as one of the small groups of supplicants, Zephlephel, whose people resembled a multi-humped stack of seaweed, brought one of their members into the teacher's presence. The Zephlephel pressed one of the leafy comrades to the top of their heap, then slid the individual forward till it huddled on the ichor. Its color was noticeably paler than that of its companions, a sickly yellow-green rather than shiny and blue-black. It shed a flutter of small, wilted leaves whenever it moved.
"Do you wish me to try to heal you, Seeker?"
Waru's voice, no longer a directed private whisper, rumbled through the hall. The Zephlephel responded with a flurry of sound like leaves swirled in water.
"Now comes the scam," Han thought. "Give Waru all your worldly goods."
"Then I will try to help you."
Every sound in the auditorium ceased abruptly. The attention of every being focused on Waru and Waru's patient. Waru leaned over the Zephlephel. Several of the golden scales liquefied and splashed over the huddled Zephlephel, covering it with a bright metallic shell. The metallic shell attached the creature to Waru like a parasite, like an exterior womb. The raw wound left where the scales had melted gushed bloody ichor. The liquid flowed over the shell, patterning it like the calligraphy on the facade of Waru's compound. The runnels flowed together, creating a translucent chrysalis around the shell. Waru shuddered. The golden scales touched, ringing together with pure, clear tones like bells enlivened by the wind. The shuddering extended into the chrysalis. It trembled. It shook and expanded. The solidified ichor exploded, then slowly opened like a flower, revealing the Zephlephel. The gold petals drew back. Waru's body resorbed them and reformed the melted scales. At Waru's base, the Zephlephel lay quiet. Suddenly it shook itself like a wet puppy. Its group mates shrilled with excitement. Its leaves, green and dark with moisture, fanned open.
"They say that their group mate has returned from the dead," 3PO translated.
"And we will give you all our worldly goods," Han said cynically.
"No, sir, not at all. They acclaim Waru as their benefactor. No mention of monetary recompense has been made."
Han shrugged, unconvinced.
"Recompense always gets mentioned, eventually. Can we get out of here? The gratitude is making me sick."
Zavari turned away from him and walked out of the auditorium. Han followed her. In the relative coolness and silence of the courtyard, welcome after the tumult of Waru's reception hall, he caught up to her and touched her shoulder.
"Zavari!"
She shrugged him off and plunged through the gateway of the retreat. Outside the calligraphed arch, she spun on him.
"Never speak inside the courtyard, never!"
"Hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to blow your cover."
3PO joined them.
"Master Han, Mistress Zavari, is anything wrong?"
"No," Han said. "I don't think so. I don't know. Except Luke's still back there."
Han plunged through the archway and ran through the courtyard. He pushed his way into the auditorium. Luke stood right where Han had left him, staring at the stage.
"Come on,"
Han said. He grabbed Luke by the sleeve and dragged him bodily out of the theater. Zavari was walking away. Only when they had caught up to her did Han let Luke go. Luke had made no attempt to escape. His gaze was distant, his expression blank.
"Is Waru your lost Jedi?"
Han asked him.
"No, I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know what it is."
Luke gazed into the distance. I ought to be able to tell, to sense another Jedi Master, but I can't. He took a deep breath.
Is it any kind of manifestation of the Force?
Han asked. Luke hesitated, then shook his head. I'm sure I'd know if it were. It isn't. It's something else. He smiled, a luminescent smile that wiped out his hesitation, his apprehension. But it was amazing. Wasn't it amazing?
Zavari nodded.
Every time I see Waru do that, I cannot believe it. But I must.
I don't believe it, Han said. If that thing isn't a manifestation of the Force, what else could it be but a fraud?
Zavari folded her arms and stared thoughtfully at the ground. Do you think I have completely lost my mind?
Yeah, that would be about it, Han said.
Luke stared through the archway. There's something, he said.
Fine, I give up. Waru is for real, which means you don't need me, because it isn't the Republic's business to interfere in people's worship.
He started down the trail without another word.
Han, Luke called, where are you going? On vacation. I still have some vacation left.
Leia and Chewbacca did what they could for Ralar, the injured Ferrario. She had astonishing powers of recuperation. Once the webbing had withdrawn, her skin began to regenerate and the hairline lacerations closed quickly enough for Leia to watch with astonishment.
What else should we do? Leia asked the other nameless Ferrario.
He shrugged, barely moving his shoulders. She'll live, Lelila, or she'll die.
Why do you hate Ralar?
She was in the chamber, Lelila. The Ferrario's languor vanished, and he leaned toward Leia, angry and intense. She must be the reason we were exiled, Lelila. Why else would the Empire sentence her to spend the trip under torture?
Random cruelty. Leia wondered why the Ferrario used her name, her alias, so often.
No, no. The Empire is cruel, Lelila, but it directs its cruelty.
The Empire is gone. Defeated. You're free, you and your people. If she expected gratitude or even happiness, she was disappointed.
Defeated.
He thumped his fist on the table.
You said you could give me my freedom, but Lelila, it wasn't yours to give.
I said you were free, Leia said. That's all I said.
He rose and bowed. Are you going to wake up your people, unnamed one?
Walking away, he said, Here, Lelila, to what purpose? Should we return to our home, Lelila?
He knows, Leia thought. She wondered if the Imperial troops had awakened him and tormented him with the news of his world's death. No, I'm sorry. It's quarantined. No one can land and live. Nothing can ever leave the planet.
He stopped short at the airlock door, his shoulders slumped. The sound he made was the cry of a grief-stricken predator.
It destroyed my world, too.
He narrowed his wide black eyes.
Ah, Alderaan. Yes, Lelila, I thought perhaps you were from Alderaan.
The airlock door slid open. The unnamed one strode from the Alderaan into the freighter's echoing entry dock.
What are you going to do?
Continue.
But you don't have to. Everyone's free now within the New Republic.
The Empire bequeathed us a world. We will continue.
But what about the other ships stranded here?
The other ships have nothing to do with me. Do with them as you will, Lelila. As for the New World... We are adventurous people. We will take our chances.
Goodbye, then, she said. And good luck.
May you always be shielded from the wind, Lelila.
Why do you keep repeating my name? Leia asked.
For power, he said. Lelila.
The airlock door began to slide shut.
But I gain only a little power from your false name, Princess Leia, he said. You wear it uncomfortably.
Jaina and Jason ran down the long dark corridor. All the other children followed them. They burst out into the light as the tiny planet's tiny sun leapt into the sky. This playtime, Jason was in Jaina's group.
Jason, I missed you so much.
I don't know where Anakin is,
Jaina said.
If we could reach for him,
Jason replied. Jaina continued,
we might be able to find him, but we have to run far away from Hethra's blanket.
Jason finished their shared thought.
We have to get past the dragon,
Jaina said. They ran to the fence. The dragon jumped out of the sand and roared and bounced against the fence. Jaina grabbed Jason and pulled him back till the dragon could not see them anymore.
The dragon forgot it had seen them and snuffled around the edge of the fence looking for a soft, warm patch of sand.
Maybe I could tame her,
Jason said,
and we could ride her away.
Jaina had no idea how Jason knew it was a mistress dragon and not a Mr. Dragon, but he was always right about this sort of stuff.
Maybe we could distract her, Jason said thoughtfully.
The dragon lumbered to the fence and rubbed her nubbly scaled shoulder against the wire mesh, closing her eyes and groaning happily.
I know,
Jaina pulled her multi-tool out of her pocket. She opened up the lens and caught the light and flashed it on the ground in front of the dragon.
Isn't she pretty?
Jason said. When the dragon opened her eyes, she saw the concentrated point of light from Jaina's lens. She snorted and lowered her head. Jaina gave the multi-tool to Jason. He was better with critters than she was. He wiggled the light near the dragon's front paws. The dragon put her paw on the place where the light was. Jason put his hand through the fence. Jaina gasped. Jason touched the dragon's great eyebrow and rubbed her smooth scales.
There, Mistress Dragon,
Jason said.
He rubbed harder. The dragon pressed against his hand and made a low, rumbling, pleasant snorting sound.
Hey, you children! The dragon jerked her head up, startled by the shout. Jaina turned around. The head proctor stood at the top of the stairwell. The other children scattered away into the growing twilight.
The fence rang as the dragon rose up and crashed against it.
Jason snatched his hand away from the fence, and he and Jaina ran to the playfield. Jason pressed the multi-tool into Jaina's hand, and she hid it in her pocket.
The head proctor laughed at them.
Now you'll believe in the dragon, I think,
he said.
Han had to admit that, as far as he could tell, the game had been honest. Of course, as far as he could tell, Han had to admit that Waru was legit, too, and he did not believe Waru, either. He plodded down the street toward the inn, reeking of six kinds of smoke, his head aching. He wished he had drunk another glass of local ale. He might feel better. He thought the stuff had magical healing powers. Just like Waru, he muttered. He reached the inn. The proprietor popped up and greeted him in a friendly manner. 3PO must have paid our bill, Han thought. Wonder what our cordial host will say tomorrow when we ask for an extension and don't pay for it. He climbed the steps, tripping only once, and counted doors carefully until he came to his own. It opened for him. The eerie glow of Luke's lightsaber flowed over his feet and across the carpet. Han quickly straightened his shirt, combed his hair and his beard with his fingers, and strolled casually inside. Luke sat in the corner exactly as he had the night before. The blade of the lightsaber hummed and disappeared. Hi, Luke,
Han said, pretending to be much more cheerful than he felt.
We have to talk, Luke said. Zavri and I, we went back to the ceremony. Han, there's no mistaking what we saw, what you saw.
Unable to maintain his pose, Han flung himself on his bed and covered his face with the pillow. His head ached fiercely.
Did you lose all the money? Luke asked.
Han flung himself up. The pillow fell off his face and plopped onto the floor.
No.
He shrugged and grinned.
Not all of it. I can get more. I just had a bad evening. Relax. Now, can I get some sleep?
No. Damn it, Han. Wake up.
How can I wake up when you haven't given me a chance to go to sleep yet?
The blade of Luke's lightsaber shivered into being. The ghostly green light filled the room. It brightened oddly to pure white. Its low hum rose to a shriek. Han shouted in protest. Luke quickly turned off the lightsaber and slipped the handle beneath his robe.
What was that?
Han asked. He was wide awake.
I don't
Nothing. It's all right.
Luke sounded uncharacteristically startled.
Han, this Waru, if we could persuade this being to come back with us, we could make a tremendous difference in the Republic. The Jedi and your legions, of course, protect the peace. Waru could directly improve people's lives.
Waru isn't a Jedi, for certain?
No. I mean, I'm not getting any of the perceptions I ought to feel. But maybe Waru is connected to the Force by some means we aren't aware of. Some means I'm not aware of.
Luke pulled his hands apart and clenched them into fists.
I just don't know. And I've got to find out.
Okay, take it easy.
Han rubbed his face. He was so sleepy he could hardly keep his attention on what Luke was saying, despite Luke's urgency.
Zavri said she thought Waru was dangerous. A danger to the Republic, she said. And now you want to take him, it, the being, back to the heart of our government?
Waru has attracted a lot of followers here. They could form a powerful faction. Wouldn't it be best to cooperate right from the beginning?
Han chuckled.
Now, you don't usually sound like a politician.
Han doubted that Luke cared one way or the other if Waru's followers formed an opposition to Leia's government, but the young Jedi was fascinated with what he perceived as remarkable abilities. He obviously wanted Waru where he could keep an eye on the being, and perhaps even learn from him. Han still had no idea why Zavri thought Waru was dangerous.
Where is Zavri, anyway?
Han asked.
Did she go home?
She stayed back at the compound, Luke said. She wanted to...
You left her there?
Sure. Han grabbed his boots from the floor where he had just thrown them and wrestled them back on.
She's lived here for years, Luke said reasonably. She's been attending Waru's meetings since they began. She knows how to take care of herself.
You said yourself something weird is going on.
And you said it was a fraud.
Just because something's a fraud doesn't mean it isn't dangerous. You saw how Zavri reacted yesterday.
He hunted around for his jacket, then realized he had never taken it off. Han Solo ran out the door. The Ferrario woman, Relau, lay very still beneath the shroud of medical equipment. Only her eyes moved. Her gaze flicked over everything in the room, searching for weaknesses, searching for escape. A moaning growl shuddered deep in her throat. Leia stood in the doorway. To disguise herself and Chewbacca, she had used color crawlers to dye Chewbacca's chestnut fur a mottled brown and silver. Her own hair, which she unpinned so it hung around her back, was now brown with dark green streaks. Gold paint touched her cheeks, and purple shadow was under her eyes. She waited till Relau's gaze found her. Leia moved forward deliberately and stopped a pace away from Relau's bedside. Relau glared at her.
I saved you, Leia said.
Who asked you to?
Relau's voice was hoarse and rough. I saved you from torture, Relau.
Leia adopted the speech habits of the unnamed Ferrario who used names to gain power.
I freed you from the web. I took you from the passenger freighter. I brought you to my ship. And I healed you, Relau.
Relau's expression changed. Apprehension replaced some of the arrogance.
You own my name. Do you also own my body?
Perhaps I did, for a moment. But I give it back to you.
Magnanimous of you.
Relau glanced around the cabin with its understated elegance and its up-to-date medical equipment.
You are too rich, I suppose, to worry about the profit.
Profit?
Relau stared at her, disbelieving.
Our freighter was taken from its route. It was hidden, far off trade routes. If you aren't a slaver, how did you find us? What are you doing here?
Leia's knees went weak. She felt herself go cold and pale. The Empire no longer existed to sell political prisoners into slavery, to steal their children and sell them. There were no slavers to steal Anakin and Jaina and Jason, she told herself.
How long have you been here? How long did you sleep?
I never slept. I was not one of the freighter's original passengers. I was brought here 5 years ago.
So you must know the Republic stopped the slave trade.
Some exist who are content to allow that belief. It suits their purposes, to steal people in secret.
Relau pushed herself to her knees on the bunk, lurching clumsily in her weakness.
How did you find this place?
She demanded.
I followed a ship here. Through hyperspace? That's impossible.
I have a method, Rilau. Don't question me too closely.
You saw the ship?
I did not. It was too far ahead of me. It came and went.
But you can trail it.
No. My method was disturbed. She could not say that Rilau's own pain had created the disturbance the Ferrario might guess Leia's abilities. The trail is gone.
My son is on the slaver ship,
Rilau wailed, with an eerie keening of desperate grief that lifted the hair at the back of Leia's neck. We'll find him, Leia said. Your son. When I catch up to that ship, we'll find him. But you know more about the slavers. You must help me figure out where to go to catch them.